Thank you, Mr. Rutkin. Yeah. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair, members of the panel. We will be making full or written submissions to the inquiry when we have had an opportunity to fully consider the disclosure to date. These oral submissions at this stage are intended to identify some issues at the earliest stage. We repeat our apology in full, which was delivered by me on behalf of Ampleforth on the first day of this hearing, the 27th of November 2017, and to acknowledge the courage of those who came to the inquiry to give oral evidence, as we do to those who have contributed to the Truth Project and the Victims and Survivors Forum. The evidence heard by the inquiry and in the documents submitted since show that since 1997, the college and the junior school at Ampleforth have been run by a separate educational trust, the St. Laurent Education Trust. Since 2010, that trust has a majority of lay trustees, has always been chaired by a deputy chair who is a layperson, and whenever safeguarding issues were discussed, that deputy lay chair took the chair of the trust. Since this year, 2017, the St. Laurent Educational Trust not only has a majority of lay trustees, but it also has a lay chair, Claire Smith. It is the St. Laurent Education Trust, not the Abbey, which runs the school. That is intended to be a permanent arrangement. Ampleforth took the decision in 1997 to separate the school effectively from the Abbey Trust and has been working ever since to solidify that aim. That has continued to be the position and will continue to be the position as it is now embedded in its constitution. The combined effects of the changes to the composition of the trust has been its composition has altered from that of an entirely monastic trusteeship to one which is now one-third monastic and two-thirds lay, creating an open structure which is accountable to external lay people. The evidence before the tribunal demonstrates that this was an important reform in emphasising the fact that the Abbey Trust does not control the school, but rather instead seeks to work in close partnership with lay people to ensure that the school retains its Benedictine ethos and culture. The Abbey's sole function in relation to the school is to ensure that the children receive an education which embodies the values and principles of the Roman Catholic Church and the rule of St. Benedict. The Abbey's influence is solely focused upon the religious backdrop to the education provided by the school, which, of course, and you must bear this in mind, is the main reason why so many parents decide to send their children to Ampleforth. We and the parents wish for that to be maintained. Ampleforth recognises that things have gone wrong in the past and is deeply sorry for those failings. 2005-2006 was a watershed at Ampleforth. It coincided with the election of a new abbot, Father Cuthbert Madden. But in the period prior to his election, there were already signs of change at Ampleforth. For example, in 1995, the then abbot, Father Patrick Barry, and the then headmaster of the college, Father Leo Chamberlain, referred an allegation of child sexual abuse perpetuated by Father Bernard Green to North Yorkshire Police and Social Services. The evidence of that is documented at AAT 000704. During the tenure of Abbot Timothy Wright, particularly following the publication of the reports of Lord Nolan in both April of 2001 and September of 2001, Father Gregory Carroll and Father Piers Grant were recalled from parishes in 2002 and 1998, respectively. Whilst Father Carroll was returned to Ampleforth, he was not housed in the Abbey, nor in close proximity to the school. He in fact was housed in a property a considerable distance away from both institutions. Father Piers Grant was not housed at Ampleforth at all, but rather at a monastery in an entirely different region where he was closely monitored by other monks. In addition, Father Timothy Wright did in fact seek external assistance from experts and commissioned both Dr. Elizabeth Mann and her daughter Dr. Ruth Mann and subsequently Dr. Susie Sheldrake to provide help and assistance. Those in fact led to the revelation of wrongdoing, which ultimately led to what the police investigation was, culminating in Operation Ellipse. Upon his election as Abbot, Father Madden began a process to change the way in which safeguarding operated at Ampleforth. Evidence of that change of approach can be seen in the record of the closing meeting of Operation Ellipse, where the police are recorded as noting a changed relationship with Ampleforth. That was April 2006, and the reference AAT00073_01. By the 27th of June 2007, it was clear that an open culture had developed with social services, and that was recognised by David Molesworth and recorded in the document AAT00857. By the 8th of November of 2007, the Safeguarding Commission had been established. By 2010, the St. Laurent Education Trust, which had been set up in 1997, was reconstituted, with the formerly advisory body becoming trustees of SLED. In the same year, the junior school was brought under the control of SLED. In that same year, 2010, the SLED trusteeship had a clear lay majority. 1/3 monastic, 2/3 lay. In addition, a SLED trustee was appointed as a member of the Safeguarding Commission. By earlier this year, the first lay chair of SLED assumed office. These are significant and substantial changes which Ampleforth have made, not only to its structure and organisation, but to engender a true separation from the Abbey Trust and school. That separation can be dated back to the establishment of SLED as a separate trust controlling the educational functions of the Benedictines at Ampleforth. Further changes are evident in the way in which Ampleforth operates if one looks at the evidence submitted in the statement of Father Woolston Petersburgh, which demonstrates dramatic changes in the composition of the teaching staff at Ampleforth. Today there are 12 monks teaching. There are, however, 94 lay teachers. Of that 94, 46 are female. In short, 11% of teachers are monks, 43% are female, and that contrasts with the position in 1989, for example, where 29% of the teachers were monks and 8% were female. In addition, all housemasters and housemistresses of Ampleforth are lay people, and the majority of the school's senior management are lay, and does in fact include a significant proportion of staff who are not Catholic. That changed approach of Ampleforth can be found in the comments of Adrian Child in his evidence the day before yesterday, the 13th of December. He said, "Then Nolan came along, and you could see a shift in Ampleforth at that time, that they were, as I said before, they were seeking advice, but possibly not from the right people, and wanting to be introducing, I think, safeguarding." And he went on to add, "Post-Cumberledge, there was a more marked shift both nationally and at Ampleforth, and that was partly to do with Cuthbert Madden, partly to do with the message of Cumberledge, and partly more recently since 2012 or whenever it was, it in fact was 2013, having the safeguarding coordinator that has a professional understanding of safeguarding. We make the point that changes, whilst driven by the current abbot, are intended to be irreversible. Ampleforth recognises that they have to be judged objectively and by external bodies, that a culture of safeguarding has to be not only in place, but also operated on the ground. Ampleforth has made significant strides in improving its approach and is determined to continue to do so. Evidence of that can be seen in the fact that last year it commissioned its own independent external review conducted by Professor Sue Proctor, who, when having examined Ampleforth safeguarding practices and procedures, found them to meet current standards and made some additional suggestions, all of which Ampleforth intend to implement, including appointing a director of governance and safeguarding. That the school is now operated entirely separately from the Abbey Trust, and that position, we say, is irreversible. And when you come to consider it, I would urge you to look closely at what Professor Proctor has said. Ampleforth intend, as I said, to submit full written submissions when all of the disclosure has been examined, and also probably when all the relevant evidence in this case study and strand have been heard, so that a comprehensive contribution can be made to assist the inquiry address the issues which it's mandated to address. Ampleforth endorses the idea of mandatory reporting of allegations of child abuse to the statutory authorities, that, of course, being the practice along the lines which Ampleforth already adopts. We fully support and embrace the engagement by the Church with the victims of child abuse. We also believe that a more general introduction of the Hurt by Abuse pilot project run by the Diocese of Hallam in 2014 is well worth exploring. This is a project which attempts to bridge the gap between the notification of abuse to the statutory authorities and the conclusion of those investigations. We also believe that there should be more engagement with and support for survivors of abuse. It's a process we have already begun and which to develop further. We also believe that it is right to continue to develop policies, practices and procedures and to entrench a culture of safeguarding in all schools. Without taking the policy decisions and putting in place the appropriate procedures and practices, the establishment of such a safeguarding culture becomes, in our view, difficult. Such a step is a very necessary first step. Ampleforth also believes that there is a need, 10 years on from the Cumberledge Commission and 16 years on from Nolan, for a thorough review of the safeguarding practices and procedures of the Catholic Church. In our view, among other reforms, a body such as CSAS will need to be better resourced and have a greater national reach to deliver the objectives of Nolan and Cumberledge. Ampleforth have welcomed the opportunity to engage with you this inquiry and look forward to learning what lessons can be drawn from what the inquiry discovers, since it will be in a position to compare and contrast, amongst other things, different schools and institutions. Might I finish by saying this? Mr. Stain this morning, in a submission that he made, I think it'll be found at page 30 of the transcript, went on to outline to you, or headline to you, how he was proposing to demonstrate how Cuthbert Madden had failed to deal with the issue. He then, of course, went on in succeeding passages to, in fact, point to evidence which related to Abbot Timothy Wright. That could hardly be described as a rigorous or indeed a logical approach. He later then made the point that, in relation to Cuthbert Madden, he had made a request, as he put it, to the Department of Education for monks to remain on site. And it was making the point that that was not approved. In fact, that decision to have them on site was, as the panel know, and as the evidence bears out, supported by the police and the statutory authorities at all relevant times. And Cuthbert Madden's reason for having them there was out of a concern, which again is documented in the evidence, to protect children in the wider community because he believed it could be better managed on the site. What I would say to you in conclusion is simply this, that I have no doubt when you come to consider the submissions and the evidence that you will